Welcome to Changing Futures, the podcast aimed at helping Birmingham's most vulnerable people live more fulfilled lives. In this series, we will explore the importance of lived experience when working with people in the areas of homelessness, substance misuse, mental health and reoffending, acknowledging the link between trauma and later behaviour, how these issues can affect any one of us, but that some individuals are more at risk than others. We will hear from those whose lives have been greatly improved by the work of Birmingham Changing Futures Together and learn how those people have been let down in the past by the services and systems set up to help them. The series will explore the multiple and complex, often unmet, needs of individuals and focus on the benefits of lived experience in service design and delivery and collaboration. Since our last episode, the COVID-19 global pandemic has altered all our lives in countless ways. In this episode, we explore the impact that the virus and lockdown has had on services and beneficiaries. We discover how services have had to adapt and what the consequences, both good and bad, have been. We begin with the initial impact and challenges of the lockdown. Birmingham Changing Futures Together Programmes Director, Natalie Allen.
Once lockdown was introduced, there was the recognition that business as usual couldn't continue, and neither could the methods and approaches to supporting people that we know work. You have to adapt, but you don't know how long for and what the impact of that change is going to be on some of the most vulnerable people that we work with. Will it set them back? It was such an uncertain time for everyone. The biggest initial challenge of lockdown was the inability to conduct face-to-face support. We know that for people with multiple and complex needs, that intense face-to-face support is an essential part of enabling them to move forward and access the services they need. They have told us time and time again how important this approach is. The transition to telephone support was a worry, as historically this type of offer hasn't worked for our client group and they don't really hold on to mobile phones for very long. So I was heartened to see across so many services that mobile phones were purchased and given to beneficiaries with no questions asked and replaced if needed, whatever it took to mean that communication could still take place in some format.
My name is Neelan Butt and I'm the service manager for the Liaison and Diversion team in Birmingham and Solihull. The impact of the lockdown for us as a service and me as a service manager was ensuring the safety of staff as well as the safety of our service users. So it was looking at the impact of the virus, how it was spreading and what impact it was having locally and what we needed to do to be able to still work as a service, deliver a service and support vulnerable people. So that meant having to work in new and flexible ways so that we could ensure that staff were safe and comfortable, which as a result, they could then support service users. Some of the immediate challenges that it presented was in terms of practicality, our staffing team, social distancing, how are we best going to achieve that? So what we had to do was have some staff working from home and stuff, some from the office bases. And that meant we could maintain the 2 meter social distancing rule. When it came to supporting vulnerable people and the service users on our caseloads, that meant we had to stop face-to-face visits in the community because a lot of third sector organisations had actually temporarily closed. So there's not anywhere we could support people to. So it meant we had to take charge on picking and delivering food parcels, buying mobile phones for vulnerable people to get in touch with us if they needed to, topping up gas and electric for people who were having benefit issues, people who were really, really isolated. We were having more of an active role in contacting them and making sure that they were okay. In terms of some of the immediate changes with staffing and some of the challenges that we had around that was ensuring that people were still comfortable coming into work and actually doing those assessments if it's in police custody, because those are areas where we had to deliver a service. The team as a whole addressed the challenges really, really well, in my opinion. I think it's brought the team closer together. I mean, we were a close-knit team anyway and we work really well together, but this just kind of brought out another tier to that level of care. They really helped each other out. For example, if some of our peer mentors were working from home, the support workers have gone out of their way to kind of carry out tasks for them and their clients. And when it comes to vulnerable people as well, I've just found, and the feedback that I've had is people have a lot more time where they're not trying to rush things, that now I find that they're trying to do things a lot more thoroughly and make sure that the outcome is right for the service users especially.
My name's Kieran Hearn and I'm a no wrong door navigator. The main function of the navigator service in normal times is to get clients from the wrong door to the right door so that they can engage in appropriate support for them. Obviously this involves a lot of field work and requires us to be out and about in the community with the client. But because of the lockdown, our service hasn't been able to function in its normal main role, so we've adapted to provide more of a support focused service. All face-to-face contact with clients had been stopped by Shelter nationwide about a week before the national lockdown. We had to work from home and only via telephone contact with the clients, and that meant we really had to sharpen our skills around working with clients solely over the phone. As well as us, there was lots of impacts to the clients themselves surrounding the increase in social isolation caused by lockdown, an increased risk of depression and anxiety because they're not adhering to their normal routines and because lots of them have lockdown alone. Most of them do not have computer access, so they've not had the level of face-to-face contact that many of us have been able to over apps like Zoom. Lots of our clients needed to be assisted very quickly with getting onto a prescription surrounding their substance abuse addiction because there was potential for the supply of their particular substances to dry up as the lockdown went on. Advocacy became more difficult as we couldn't speak to personal independence payment or universal credit, for example, with the client present to confirm their consent for the Department for Work and Pensions to speak to us. That's something we normally do that we weren't able to do. Trying to maintain relationships using only phone calls and text messages rather than face-to-face interaction was a challenge because of all the sort of extra body language and tone that you can convey in a face-to-face context.
The service provision has adapted in multiple ways, really. So we cover custody, courts, and we have an outreach component and a prison service component as well. So our custody component, we've still carried on doing those face-to-face assessments, but with the adaptations of PPE, social distancing, and kind of increased hygiene rules. In the court system, the courts were actually closed to the public, so that's entailed a lot of virtual courts and dial-ins through the computers to be able to offer advice and a lot of emails of reports. And we've done a lot of telephone support to staff in the cells where they've needed information or advice, or we've had to do telephone assessments. In the outreach service, we had to stop any face-to-face contact, but again, we've massively increased our kind of remote contact with clients, whether that's over phone or other electronic means. We've liaised a lot with other agencies over the phone to get things set up or get medications dropped off. So there's been a lot of behind the scenes work that's been going on to ensure that people felt well supported. With our prison service, we did have to initially put that on hold because the prison was on lockdown. But again, now we've reopened that service and it's about slowly reintroducing staff into the prisons to see how we can support people that are being released and how we can help them to be safe and to be comfortable in the environments that they're being released to.
So to address the increased need for clients to be placed on prescription for drug replacement medications who might previously have not been engaging with substance misuse support, we had to work very closely with CGL to arrange for telephone and hub-based appointments in a very short time frame. We had to find alternatives to traditional food banks to ensure that people were still getting fed, so such as like food delivery services that popped up in the interim for particularly vulnerable clients. Where possible, we've organised three-way phone communication between ourselves, the client and third-party organisations that clients wish us to advocate for them to. And we've noticed an increase in the amount of people that we've helped to apply for benefits. Also used various funds like Change Into Action and the Bridging Fund at BVSC to help our clients during this time. We've helped clients to make budgeting plans and also directed some clients with worries about paying for energy bills to the relevant companies to ask for special dispensation during the crisis. And some energy companies have been really helpful in this area.
Many services have adapted their delivery in response to the current situation. So things like people not having to attend the job centre in order to receive their benefit payments or having access to their script over a longer period of time. And one thing that I suppose the situation has demonstrated is the ability of services to flex and adapt. And some of this is what we and the National Fulfilling Lives Programme have been calling for in terms of that wider systems change, and it's happening. The aim now is to see if that flexibility can continue when lockdown restrictions are lifted. As things continue to change, services are required to adapt quickly. And it was great to hear that as soon as restrictions on meeting people from outside of your household were lifted, staff were arranging to go on social distancing walks with their clients and to allow for some face-to-face contact to take place.
But what have the consequences of this challenging time been so far, both good and bad? And what of future provision? Neelam Butt.
Some of the consequences of the changes, it's been a bit of a mixture, really. One of the things that is surprising but very positive is the level of engagement, where we found people have engaged a lot more quickly with us, where before we might have had to try on numerous attempts to get hold of people or get them to engage with us. Now we're finding that actually people are giving us contact details and they're actually engaging straight away over the phone, and they're getting in touch with us a lot more often than what people used to pre-pandemic. And so that's been a really, really positive outcome. And we're already looking at, actually, is there anything that we could do different to build on that going forward? Some of the, I suppose, more challenging things have been that for some people, they prefer that face-to-face contact and they build rapport that way. So it's been challenging having to kind of work remotely and try to build a positive relationship with people that are in very vulnerable situations, whether it's they've got mental health issues, substance misuse issues, they might have learning disabilities, they might respond better to people talking to them face to face. So that's been a bit of a challenge. And aside from that, I suppose it's keeping people's hope alive as well, because it can be quite a scary thing to constantly only have the media to turn to for information, or social media, where things can get really, really intense and heated. And if people have no social support to kind of have an outlet against, that can become really internalized and it can affect people's mental health. So that's kind of a bit of a challenging aspect, and that's for both staff and service users. And so we've had to kind of mitigate that by, you know, having extra supervision for staff or having extra phone calls to some of our more vulnerable service users to let them know that we are there. And if they need any help, you know, giving them information on where they can access help. Some of the changes we've had is working a lot more flexibly. So some people have had to work from home. Some staff prefer that because it's more flexible for them and their life. Some staff prefer to come into work. So what is really highlighted for us is actually the level of focus and work and output that we get from staff is higher if they're working in ways that are more flexible and comfortable to them. And that's certainly something that we will be taking forward as a team.
My name is Binal Patel, and I am the outreach lead for the liaison and diversion team. What we've identified is that a lot of people have engaged better with our service via telephone. So that could be something to look into. Do people feel more comfortable engaging over the phone initially while they develop a relationship with us? And should we be adapting our ways of working rather than just keep offering appointments? This has also increased trust in services, because we've had a lot of client feedback saying that the help they've received from us has been amazing. Even for things like giving them a food parcel, they've been very grateful for that support. I suppose this whole pandemic has made us look at how the service is going to work once lockdown is lifted. It's been a learning curve for everyone, but I suppose a positive for us is watching how the staff have come together to support each other and our clients. It's also shown us how well we've worked with our partner agencies. We've all come together to support each other, sharing resources that might be available, keeping in touch with each other to make sure that everyone's doing okay, how, you know, other services are supporting their clients, what we can learn from each other, what's been working, what's not. For us, I think it's just shown how well our team has worked under these difficult times, and our client service feedback has also reflected this.
Elena Raybould, the network coordinator at Birmingham Changing Futures, is also seeing some positives.
With the service provision, one of the things that I have seen, there's been much more collaboration between organisations, and there has been, you know, people working together much more than they would usually. So that's been something that I've observed definitely with the members I've been speaking to as part of No Wrong Door. And I feel there's been a lot of positive work in communities as well, and people have been helping much more than they usually would. So, you know, there is positives that have come out of this as well as it being negative.
The negative consequence of us adapting our service in this way is that it has given us worries about how clients will potentially perceive the service. There's a concern clients will come to expect things from the service that can't and are not provided in our normal way of working. But a positive consequence for some clients has been that they've had time while following lockdown guidance to work on, you know, their mental health or substance abuse issues away from some of the negative influences in their life and the hustle and bustle of the city, as it were. The lockdown has also encouraged a lot of our clients to start engaging in further support around such things as their substance misuse or their mental health. We feel that he's motivated some clients to engage with services that they might not have considered to working with prior to lockdown.
And I think it's natural that we're not going to go back to how we were previously. And I think it's fair to say that for any sector or any service, some of the changes that we have made, we are in the midst of evaluating some of those changes and seeing the impacts of them and actually discussing with our staff and service users that what do they feel should be the changes we keep going forward and how we can actually develop those changes to develop the service and offer the best help that we can to our service users. So that might include things like having more virtual meetings where people from all over the country can maybe dial in from other liaison and diversion services. It might be having more service user involvement forums where, again, people from around the country and around L&D sites can actually dial in and have an input on a more national level, because we have that opportunity now. And in terms of planning at the moment and how the future looks in terms of service provision, I think it's fair to say that it's very uncertain in terms of what things are going to look like. Yes, we are trying to slowly plan for that, but I think with the best of intentions, as we've kind of seen as a country with this pandemic, which has just kind of appeared and how it's kind of affected everyone's life, I think trying to look at what the service will be like in the future is kind of a bit similar, where we can plan for it, but we don't know how it's going to pan out. One of the things I can definitely say is there will still continue to be a massive focus around our service users and getting feedback from them to see what things worked for them over this pandemic, what didn't work, and what kind of things we need to work on as a service, because it is a service for them. So it makes sense for me as a service manager to take their ideas and thoughts on board. And it's listening to the staff team as well, seeing what worked well for them, what was the most comfortable aspect for them, where there were concerns, and did we address them in the correct way, and making sure our staff have the most support available to them from myself as a manager, as well as kind of the whole trust as an NHS service. And I think it is kind of exciting at the same time as well that services will need to kind of develop with the times now. Whereas for the courts, for example, they've been planning for virtual courts in Birmingham for a long time, but they've had no choice but to do that now in a very short space of time. So it's looking at the possibilities that actually, if we have ideas, that it is possible for them to kind of come to life a lot quicker than what maybe traditionally they have done. So there's a lot of little things to consider. There's a lot of big decisions to be made. And I think it can only happen working together as a collective with different agencies, the people that we work with and the people that we work for.
As we now think about leaving lockdown step by step, working out what service provision will look like going forward is both a challenge and it's an opportunity for us. We want to make sure that by the time lockdown is mostly relaxed, our clients will be in a position to engage with support services so that we can refocus on navigating clients to the right services rather than providing that support ourselves.
I think it's impossible to predict where we are going to be when lockdown is lifted and what needs will surface for our beneficiaries with multiple and complex needs. Whilst there are many positives and some individuals who are the most entrenched have accepted help and support and accommodation for the first time, there are many for whom this will have been a setback and there is still so much more work to do. We just have to do our best to be flexible in responding to that need and working with our partners to do that.
In our next episode, we hear from the experts by experience on how COVID-19 has affected them personally and their ability to support people with multiple and complex needs. Thank you for listening to Changing Futures, the podcast aimed at improving outcomes for Birmingham's most vulnerable people.